So we're here today to consider the wisdom of Ernest Holmes in his from his book, Can We Talk to God? And I would say that this book, Connie's new book, mm-hmm. Chatting with the Beloved, is a resounding yes. So there's no doubt in my mind, and I know that as you read this book, you will feel that energy, that connection that Connie experienced. So beautiful, so powerful. And know truly that we are all loved. When we think of spiritual mind treatment in regards to the topic in Chapter 5 of the power back of the word. I always thought that was odd phrasing, back of the word, behind the word, within the word. anyone who's been in science of mind or metaphysics for a while certainly can embrace that idea, that there is power in our thoughts and in our words. We speak the spiritual mind treatment with conviction, it's a very logical, I'm sure all of you know, it's a very logical sequence of knowing, recognizing spirit, aligning with that energy, and then knowing that as we are part of that one life, that one spirit, that we too are creative, and we too can manifest our deepest desires through speaking our word, through our intentions, through our willingness to be that, knowing that every desire in our heart was placed there because it's spirit within us that wants that experience. And so if we think of it that way, there's no issues of, am I worthy to have that experience? It is the desire of spirit to have that experience through us. So the power comes through our focus. And so someone could speak of spiritual mind treatment, and if they don't believe the words, then it's not going to be as powerful. Sometimes we speak the words over and over like affirmations until we find a way to embrace the power, to really feel it. And that's really what we're looking for, is the feeling place of the desire, they call embodying our thought, our words. So it's with the focus that we really feel the power. I've been reading a book by Pam Grout. It's called E-Squared. 9 do-it-yourself energy experiments that prove your thoughts create your reality. Isn't that a great title?
What's the name of the author?
Pam Grout, G-R-O-U-T. The title definitely captured my interest. She's kind of playing on the, what is it, MC squared with Einstein. She's calling to you to experiment with the field of possibility, looking at quantum physics. But she had a really interesting quote that I want to start with. The greatest discovery and development of the coming years will be along spiritual lines. Here is a force which history clearly teaches has been the greatest power in the development of men and history. Yet we have been merely playing with it, have never seriously studied it as we have studied physical forces. Someday people will learn that material things do not bring happiness and are of little use in making men and women creative and powerful. Then the scientists of the world will turn their laboratories over to the study of spiritual forces. When this day comes, the world will see more advancement in one generation than it has seen in the past 4. I love that. When that day comes, the world will see more advancement in one generation than it has seen in the past four. That is a quote by Charles Proteus Steinmetz, and he was the inventor of the alternating current motor in the 1890s. So he was a scientist, and he was working with electricity. And I think it's rather synchronistic that that quote really spoke to me, because Ernest often brings up electricity as an example of the power that is part of the universe and has been here since the beginning, but we've only recently learned how to harness it and use it to make life easier. So what else is here already, you know, that we don't know yet? Could it be the power of our word? Some of us know it, and yet it's not always, we don't always manifest from it instantly, and we'll get into some of the reasons why that might be a little bit later, but if you can remember that it's a lot like electricity, and we don't go through an evaluation of, am I worthy to turn the light on? We don't think about, did I meditate long enough? Is the light switch going to work today? You know? And so that's where we need to shift our perspective, to come to rely on the power of our word, just like we rely on something in our everyday life like electricity. So spiritual mind treatment is an example of demonstrating spiritual principle, that there is power in our word. And, you know, we've all heard Jesus say those famous words, "It is done unto us as we believe." So what are we willing to believe? You know, that's kind of what it comes down to. What are we willing to embrace as a possibility? What are we willing to consider as possible? And, you know, I always say all things are possible through spirit, but I certainly don't manifest my words instantaneously. And in some ways, there's probably a blessing in that at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we want to believe in something greater, and the time perhaps when we need to believe that the most is when we might be least able. When, you know, when we need that change, when we need that shift, right now is when we feel the stress, when we're under some kind of circumstance that we're not happy about. And so, you know, we might pray really hard, and yet what will work better is to relax into it. And it's this, I just thought of my yoga class, because I teach gentle yoga, and I tell students about to relax into things, to be kind, to be gentle to your body, that your body responds. And I never thought of it in those terms as far as the power flowing, the healing power flowing through, that when we force or are stressed, you know, we're really choking off the channel of that energy that naturally flows through us. So as we relax, we're opening to that. And part of relaxing and part of opening to embracing a greater idea may require us to let go of the past. It's so human to think about the way things have been, to remember the way that it was, and think, okay, we have it figured out, that's how it's going to be. I think there's sort of a comfort in the familiarity of what has been, and so and there's comfort in living in a universe that's predictable, and yet those kind of comforts actually stifle our experience to a certain extent if we're anticipating more of the same. Now, if your life is amazing, and we have friends that demonstrate that all the time, like Connie Chandler, more of the same can be a very wonderful mantra. When you're in the flow and the synchronicities are coming and you feel the magic of life, more of the same is where we want to be. So it's all about your perspective and the experience you're having in the moment, to be aware of what you're willing to manifest next. So we want to, when we're in a place of stress, we're wanting something to change, to embrace that idea that there is this infinite power, there is this presence in the universe that already has it resolved. That the answer is already there. And we're just relaxing into opening to what that is. And that does take some discipline when you're in the stress of it, you know, to relax into it. We are conditioned when we're in the stress to focus on the problem. And I do believe it was Einstein that said the problem cannot be resolved at the same vibration. You can't stay in the problem and find the resolution, find the solution. You have to relax and open to something different. So one of the strategies that Pam Grout talks about in her book is to shift our perception for short periods of time. Now, I think Abraham even talks about, isn't it 17 seconds? If you can hold an idea, a desire for 17 seconds, that's very short. She suggests 48 hours, and that's what most of these experiments that she's talking about in her book ask you to suspend judgment and be like a scientist and just open to the possibility of what can be for 48 hours. Now, one of the ways to open to this possibility is through feeling a oneness with spirit and with all of life. And one of the examples of that comes from Native Americans. I was recently on a retreat with a couple of people that do a lot of the Native American traditions and ceremonies. And the tradition of Native American is to, they live so close to the earth and so connected to everything of the earth that there was this sense of oneness. They belonged here. They were part of the earth. And they felt that spirit was part of everything on the earth, and that they could communicate and get guidance through the natural setting, through things that show up. And so if they needed help, they would go out in nature and wait for a sign. Something would show up, and they had meaning on different birds and animals, and you know, they went out, they would go out on these spiritual quests and be alone for days and wait for things to be revealed to them. And so I think it's a perfect example of how we come from a tradition, even though, you know, Western society has moved away from a lot of that. But we come from a tradition of being very connected to the natural world and finding spirit and revelation there. The Hopi is a really good example. They used to live in the Grand Canyon. They had a good life on the Colorado River, plenty of water, food. And about 1,000 years ago, they were guided to leave that area and go to the desert, where life was much harder. If they had stayed where they were, they probably would no longer be they're one of the few tribes that are still on their original, you know, the land that they moved to in the desert. The Western settlers didn't really want to live in the desert, so they said, you can have it. I love how Ernest Holmes says that God's words are yea and amen. Just affirming that whatever we focus on, that we get a yea and amen. So, I mean, that's very powerful. And it makes us be careful or wise where our focus is. Mm-hmm. So the power is in our words, just like the power is in electricity. We're not putting the power in the words. Just like electricity, the power is already available to us. It's there for us to use. So that brings a lot of, you know, a great sense of comfort. So when we focus on what we're willing to embrace, the desires of our heart, when we're willing to see a greater vision of what's possible, that's very powerful work. We have this thing called visioning, where we go into meditation and we ask questions. What is God's highest vision for my life? What does that look like? And when you do that kind of work and you receive something that you're willing to embrace, that feels, you know, it will feel right. It will light you up. When we begin to do the focus, the moving towards that, allowing that to manifest, it is very powerful work, because what comes up is everything that needs to be healed, that has kept you from moving towards that vision. And so Bruce Lipton is one of the people that has talked about, and he's a perfect example of someone who's a scientist that allowed the discoveries to move him to being a spiritual teacher. He was a cell biologist. And what he discovered in his research brought him to know that our thoughts influence our cells, that we are not bound by DNA, that we can change the very DNA of our bodies with our thinking, that our thought creates this pool of energy, and so the cells live in that pool of energy. That is, you know, our bodies are a pool of energy. And so is this pool of energy, what is this pool of energy? What is the frequency? Is it, you know, is it a low frequency? Is it a high frequency? And so the cells respond to that. But he also talked about in his book, The Honeymoon Effect, that so much of how we are in the world, how we show up, comes from not a conscious choice, that we are functioning from the programming that was downloaded when we were children, from usually between the age 2 and 5. And Pam Grout mentioned that as well. And she said, I love this, she said, "This, do you really want a 5-year-old running your life?" And so some of the beliefs or the feelings that come up in me, you know, they don't seem really rational. They seem more like a 5-year-old. And so it's our job to examine those beliefs and choose from those beliefs and choose something different if that belief feels like a less than, like I'm not good enough. Because we know the truth that as spirit, each of us is perfect the way we are. Perfect. So when we can release the past, when we can suspend that that downloaded programming, everything that we heard from parents, from society, from our culture, when we can suspend that and move to a greater place of what's possible, that's where things start to happen. That's where the universe responds. And getting back to the Native American philosophy or traditions, when we were on retreat recently, we did a meditation to honor nature. And in the Animal Speak book, Ted Andrews talks about that birds are usually the first to respond to mental thought. And so this is coming from the tradition that your thoughts are creative and the universe responds to your thoughts. So Native Americans knew that the universe, the natural world, would respond to their thoughts. And so we had done this meditation, and we spent a little bit of time thinking about birds, appreciating the wonder of birds, and just how amazing birds can be. And then when we came out of the meditation and we stepped out onto the deck of this cabin we were staying in, which was right on the Potomac River, and as soon as we all stepped out, there was a blue heron that flew right by us. I mean, it was magical. You know, and it's those kind of experiences that to me are magical, mystical, whatever you call them, synchronistic coincidences, that when those kind of things happen, they touch you, they touch me, and I'm changed. I'm willing to open to, you know, I want more of that. I want to experience more of that, because there's such a connection beyond this physical world with something so wonderful, so amazing. And that's why my latest vision is about going on retreats. Because to me, when you're away from home for a weekend, when you have set an intention to connect with something beyond what's normal, let's say, it could be something in the natural world, but you know, not all retreats use nature. So you're willing to connect, you have an intention to connect with something, to receive guidance, or just to feel something. And it is a feeling. It's more than just witnessing. It brings a feeling. That when people have that experience, they're changed. They're open. They're living a life that becomes mystical. And I think the more experiences you have like that, then the more that you're open to it and the more that you're looking for it. And so then the words become even more powerful, because there's such a belief, there's such a conviction. There's a, when you have an experience like that, it's a knowing. And to me, that's the most powerful place, to be where you know something. It's not a hope, it's not a wish, it's even greater than a belief. To know is a certainty. And when you have that certainty, that's when the universe really, really gets it. That's when the universe, spirit, whatever you call that, the field of possibilities is what Pam Grout calls it. That's when it really responds. And so, so what she says is that the reason we don't manifest as often as we'd like to is that we need more practice. We need more practice using this field of possibilities, using quantum physics. So Ernest Holmes has another wonderful quote that I have here. It's called, and it says, and this was really what I was just talking about, one definite experience which proves the integrity of the soul. And a direct relationship to the universal mind and spirit will do more good than all the teachings of theology. For thus alone can we arrive at a place where we can say, this I know, whereas I was blind, now I see. So it's that kind of experience that we're looking for, to come to this place of knowing. And once we know and have that certainty, it's so easy to trust, to just trust that it's going to work out, that as long as we're in this place of focusing on what we want, that it will work out, that everything is working out for our highest and best. So, getting back to Pam, she talks about some of the reasons that we don't manifest, and I mentioned the early conditioning. She also says that we tend to be wishy-washy. That that if we're not really clear, then the universe isn't sure what we want. I also mentioned, you know, we tend to focus on the problem and what's wrong, and our brains are so good at that. I mean, that to me is something that is another part of, you know, really the human experience, that we're always looking at what's wrong. And part of that comes from biology, that, you know, that reptilian part of our brain that has to do with survival. It's about scanning, you know, scanning the environment for anything that might be dangerous. And we don't really need that anymore for the most part. I mean, I'm sure it serves us at times, but... But we are made to do that. And so it takes practice to start to look at what's right. And as we look at what's right, focusing on what's going right, that opens up a whole new direction. Then the universe says, oh, you're looking at what's right. Okay, here's some more of what's right, and here's some more of what's right. And this is really grand, and it just goes on and on. And that there's two sides to every quality. And so if we're seeing something wrong, then to look at, well, what's the other side of that? And allow that to manifest. How would that look? Just, you know, using the power of our thoughts, what would that look like? She also talks about, I mentioned this a little bit in the beginning, that, you know, when we tend to have something figured out, we think we know this is the way things are, then that actually, in quantum physics, it's called collapsing the wave of possibility. And so I would encourage us all to be more childlike, to pretend, what if? What if something else could be, and this didn't have to be? You know, what if? What if our deepest desires were right out that door? You know, what if we're something manifests that is beyond belief, beyond our current belief, to be open to something that's beyond what we even might consider? You know, that's why we often tag our spiritual mind treatments with this or something better, because we know that our human perceptions often limit the possibilities. And so something better is always available. It's always available. She describes this idea of having it figured out as carrying, you know, having your arms so full that you can't pick up anything else. And so you know, that's often what, you know, our minds are so full of the way things are that we have to let something go in order to make room for a new possibility. I like that image. Mm-hmm. So getting back to belief, if you think something is impossible, then your mind will find data to support that, because that's what the mind does. So think beyond what you think is possible. This is a big one that gets in our way. It's that worthiness. I know for me that's probably my biggest obstacle, is this whole, you know, am I worthy to have the experience of my heart? And I already sort of addressed that in saying that if we can really align with knowing who we are as spiritual beings, there is no concern for worthiness. We don't have to be worthy to flip on the light switch. It's the same thing with our heart desire. She also says that we think we have to do it alone. You know, that's the American way. We're tough and strong, and we can pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and do what needs to be done. But it's not human determination that this power responds to. It's an opening. It's a willingness. It's a relaxing into it. It's not a pushing. It's not a forcing. It's a breathing into it. It's allowing, which just feels so much easier. So Pam has some strategies for tricking the mind to help cooperate. One is called the deadline principle. And as you know, if somebody gives you a deadline to do something, all of a sudden, you're focused. You've got to get it done. You have this deadline hanging over you. And so that's why with all of her experiments, she gives the universe, the field of possibility, a deadline to manifest, a 48-hour. Most of them are 48 hours. I think there's only one that's like 72 hours. And with that deadline, so she's encouraging you to set up this scientific experiment, and so you're stating your, and I have the form for you, but you're stating your question, your hypothesis, and you're giving the universe 48 hours to manifest. So within that 48 hours, because you know you're doing this experiment, you're paying attention. You are, she says you should be paying attention, seeking it out as you would a lost set of car keys. Really focused, really looking, really anticipating that it's coming, that it's there. And it may not even take you 48 hours. I know the first time I did this, I didn't actually write it down, but I was thinking, that 48 hours. Now let's see. There was that small synchronicity. There was, well, I guess that could count. You know, I was kind of, because I didn't want to have failed. The next morning, I had my mastermind group. We had one synchronicity after another. It just blew my socks off. So I thought, well, if the universe needed a little extra time, I was okay with that. She also talks about thinking of your mind as a puppy, housebreaking a puppy, and that you're always taking the puppy outside to go to you know, to pee or poop. And so think of you taking your mind outside the box of what you're used to show the mind that there's new things and new experiences and new possibilities. Her book is very fun, as you can tell from some of the examples I've shared with you. So I want to close with a prayer that came across my email yesterday. It came from Joe Vitale, who you probably know from The Secret. He's gotten very much into the Ho'oponopono, the Hawaiian shaman traditions. And if you're not familiar with it, it's a very sweet, simple philosophy. Basically, it's a mantra that you repeat as a form of being grateful and also cleansing whatever, even if you don't know what's wrong, that there, you know, that there's this cleansing going on that not only takes place in this present moment, but it cleanses for the future and for the past. It's a very interesting shamanic philosophy. This prayer comes from the person, so Dr. Hugh Len, who he travels around the country and the world talking about this Ho'oponopono. But he was trained by a woman called Maura. I don't have a last name on her. And she is the one that shared this prayer. And so to me, there's kind of three parts to it. It's spirit speaking, it's us responding, and then spirit speaking. So if you want to breathe and, you know, close your eyes, whatever you want to do is fine. Spirit speaks. I am the I. I come forth from the void into the light. I am that emptiness, that hollowness beyond all consciousness. The I, the id, the all. I draw my bow of rainbows across the waters. I am the continuum of minds with matters. I am the invisible, untouchable breeze, the undefinable atom of creation. I am the I. Dearest spirit, superconsciousness, greatest possibility. Please locate the origin of my feelings, my thoughts of seeing lack or anything less than ideal. Take each thought. Take each and every level, layer, area, and aspect of my being to this origin of thought. Analyze it and resolve it perfectly with God's truth. Come, bring this resolve through all generations, through all generations of time and eternity, healing every incident and its appendages based on the origin of these limiting beliefs. Please do this healing according to God's will for me to become all I am capable of being. Do this healing until I am at a perfect place filled with light and truth, filled with God's peace and love and forgiveness of myself for my incorrect perceptions. Please do this healing until I am filled with forgiveness for every person, place, circumstance, and events which contributed to this, these feelings, thoughts, and limiting beliefs. I hear the resolution. Peace be with you. All my peace. The peace that is I. The peace that is I am. The peace for always, now, and forever and evermore. My peace I give to you. My peace I leave with you. Not the world's peace, but only my peace. The peace of I. Namaste. Yeah.